Hey, it's Christian Serratos, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Girl.
Hello, everybody. This is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
And I'm The Walking Dead Girl. You're listening to The Walking Dead Girl, episode 122. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show, The Walking Dead, from AMC. In addition to reviewing the show, we play listener feedback, so join the conversation.
And if you want to give us feedback, send email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. You can go to our website, thewalkingdeadgirl.com/voicemail, to leave a voicemail feedback. And if we play your voicemail, you will get a Walking Dead Girl t-shirt. Just like that. Just leave us a voicemail and the t-shirt's yours. And of course, you can post a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thewalkingdeadgirlpodcast.
Before we get started, I want to remind you guys that we will be discussing every gory detail about the TV show. So obviously there will be spoilers. Make sure you watch the current episode before listening. And this episode was season 7, episode 10, correct?
Thanks for the technical information.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, so there's different directions we can take this episode. We can go in a positive, lighthearted way and like, yeah,
everything
we love
is
it.
Great.
It's positive. It's awesome. But off the air, you told me that it wasn't your favorite, right? I mean, there was some things that you didn't like about it.
Well, it's kind of forgettable, meaning there wasn't any specific events that really stood out to me. And yes, there was some cool elements like the trash people's zombie slave, whatever that is.
Winslow.
Yeah. But other than that, I just don't feel like the show is going anywhere. I mean, I'm not as excited as I was before. I thought the first episode of the season was very good.
Yeah.
Of the season, like season 7.
Yeah.
But I don't know, since like I felt like the mid-season premiere for this last episode... For this season,
last half, yeah,
was pretty like, eh, here's our show. You know, it wasn't really like anything. I remember being really excited about every season having this some new and exciting and dramatic, always pushing the envelope. You know, it doesn't feel like they're pushing the envelope anymore, but just telling a story. But I guess they got lashed back because they pushed the envelope too far by saving. The killings of the two characters until the next season. So I don't know what they're doing, but I feel like they've lost their groove a little bit, which is kind of disappointing.
This episode had some strange direction it was going to, especially, I mean, the like you said, the spiked walker was kind of a cool effect, but I don't know if I'm into the whole trash people like that. Those people there were some things about those people that didn't make sense, and it was out of place, I think. That whole arc of them meeting them and stuff, it was kind of out of place. I feel like they just threw it in there, just say, oh, we need more people. Let's just make up this tribe and just throw it in there. Like, hey, look, we just found some new people all of a sudden.
I think the problem is there's just so much going on that we kind of lose focus on the things that we used to care about the most. I don't know how Rick is doing mentally. I don't know how Michelle's doing mentally.
He seems to be smiling.
He's smiling so freaking much, but there's no context to it for me, it seems, so I don't understand it. Like, I don't know.
Not even when Gabriel explicitly asked the question so Rick could explain it?
I just didn't feel connected to it. I don't know.
The dialogue was kind of hokey, too. I mean, a little bit. It's kind of over the top.
I mean, I understand the trash people. I'm just going to keep calling them trash people. I don't care if they're called scavengers, because apparently they're called scavengers. I'm like, no, they're the trash people.
Well, I heard on The Walking Dead,
The Talking Dead,
I just read online that they call them the heapsters, because like garbage heap, right?
Yeah.
And then heapster, like, because they're hipsters. I don't know. Whatever.
They're like those new age, like 90s, like post-apocalyptic. It reminds me of Mad Max. Mm-hmm. Where like they don't know how to speak English, so they just use their broken English.
Yeah, well, we'll dive into that when we get to that point, because that's really... But, I mean, there were some good elements, like, I think the Daryl moments,
I thought all of Daryl's moments were very strong, because mm-hmm. Daryl's a very talented Norman Reedus is a very talented actor, and he reads really well on screen with his face and stuff. So you always feel like you know what he's thinking, even though he doesn't say anything. It's really interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't really have many lines, and he doesn't really need to say much.
He's like the same with like Rick, right? I mean, Norman. Yeah.
Andrew Lincoln. Yeah. I mean, Andrew Lincoln's acting has been okay lately, just because they don't really give him too much. I like his commitment to like the action scene. I was watching the behind the scenes and how he was really climbing up those trash heaps and stuff. Like he's really the editor. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I really liked the strongest scenes for me were Carol and Daryl, because that's the stuff I missed, that kind of internal drama. Do I tell Carol that people have died because of our poor decision? Or do I just let her live in this land where, you know, everything's okay? Because she doesn't want to fight anymore. And she's explicitly said, if I have to kill again, I'll lose myself.
Right.
And Daryl loves Carol, so he's not going to put her in a situation like that again, even though we do need her. It won't do her any good. You're not saving her.
Yeah, and I think those scenes paid off well because of the tremendous history we had with them. Well, I mean, it wasn't intense like love affair or something, but it was like
it was a strong connection since the day he started looking for his daughter, her daughter, and never stopped. You know, they've had this bond of like the super sweet and super aggressive, but then they also have the opposites. They complement each other well, because yes, Carol on the outside of the exterior is very like motherly and sweet and kind, and Daryl's very rough and tough and cold, but on the insides they're the complete opposite. Carol's like this is what Daryl looks like on the outside, and what Daryl looks like on the inside is what Carol looks like on the outside. So that's why they're such a good duo. And we haven't got a lot of those kind of moments anymore, because their storylines have taken two completely different roads. When was the last time we saw Carol? Was when she was with Maggie?
You mean like interacting with others, you mean, right?
Yeah.
Because lately they've showed her, but she was always been by herself mostly. And also she's been interacting with Ezekiel, which is another weird relationship we need to talk about there.
That just needs to be explained already. It just needs to show itself. Not with like, I brought you cobbler. Do I like you or am I just nice? You know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's dive into this episode and try to figure out what's going on here. The episode is called New Best Friends. And I think that theme plays out a lot in this episode, like friendship kind of thing. So I think that's why they called it that, but we'll see. And it starts off with the Kingdomers waiting for the Saviors again. The Kingdomers are dropping off food and supplies. This scene has kind of been overplayed again, because I'm not like, we've already seen them get into this tiff with each other.
Uh-huh.
So we know that. So they're basically repeating the same thing again. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
The Kingdomers are pushing the limits. No, Richard is pushing the limits.
I think, yeah.
Ezekiel says, hey, hold down. And then the other guys on the other end are kind of say, hey, you know, you better watch out, because next time. Well, they said that last time.
And we already established that this character, that leader of the Saviors for this group, this drop-off, is not very strong. He's very, like, passive about everything.
Which is different, right? Because normally the Saviors' leader is always, like, ruthless.
And I think if we're going to have any reason for why this scene was in this show, is because to kind of plant the seed in Ezekiel's mind, I hope, that this can't last forever, that no matter how hard you try, there will always be a problem or something will always come up.
Well, you know what? I would have bought that if someone would have died at that point. Like if this scene was pivotal, like actually someone from the Saviors, some of the Kingdom side died, then this scene would have made complete sense. Cause it's like, oh, this is the moment where Ezekiel sees a death and, but it just played out like the previous episodes. Like, okay, you know, it's posturing, right?
Here's a warning.
It's posturing.
You take your stick and gun away. And I think also the scene was, if I'm trying to find, because I'm always trying to find a reason why this is here.
Yeah.
But I think that Daryl says to Morgan, look, how long are you going to keep up this I can't kill anyone story? Look around you. Like, grow up a bit. You know,
this scene was also for Morgan, you know, to lose his staff.
He loses a stick, which is also letting him know that he's like he needs to drop the act of this sensei type BS because it's not working for him anymore.
Which was a good line, but
yeah, and we now figure out that Daryl isn't going to be the one to convince the savior, convince the Kingdomers that to band together. It's Morgan that has to.
Mm.
Because Daryl leaves at the end. He says, look, I can't do this. You have to do this. And then Morgan's like, I can't.
Mm.
But he's going to have to because it's not working out.
It's a little frustrating, isn't it? Watching these characters go on like this. It's like, come on already. You know?
Like, we know what they want. Like, we know what's supposed to happen. And we know eventually it's going to happen. It's just like, let's just skip the journey, the yellow brick road to the destination and just get there.
Yeah. I just feel like, me personally, I think this scene was redundant because we already saw this conflict. And then the Gavin guy said, oh, next time this happens, someone will die. Well, this is a next time and no one died. Like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like,
they were punching last time, unless, and now they're punching again.
Unless this scene is trying to show us that Gavin is weak on the savior side. I mean, yeah, on the savior side. And
which is why they lucked out with, you know, getting by.
Yeah. They got lucky big time because in Gavin,
he's not that other guy that comes to Hilltop.
Yeah, because I forget his name. But if it was that guy, someone definitely would have died already, you know? Or you know, he would have released walkers into the kingdom, just like he did on Hilltop.
And yeah, in Hilltop, people don't do anything. They're all farmers and stuff. They don't even have trained military men. So the fact that this is getting by, it's like a keg waiting to explode.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't happen. And I guess with every kind of political or like social like struggle, there's always radicals. And I think Richard is a radical for, mm-hmm. like, I feel like the two radicals are Rosita and Richard. They are on the extreme sides of wanting to fight back, and they don't necessarily think it through properly, and they go to dramatic extremes. And I think the pacifist on the other end of it is Morgan and Carol.
And
Ezekiel, yeah. But Carol doesn't even want to get involved at all. Like, she just, people lied to her to make her feel better. That at that point, yes, it's a good idea that he did that, but it just shows that Carol is weak and she's not as strong as she was before because she can't handle it.
Yeah, we'll see. But I mean, the question is, you know, how long is that going to last? Is Carol going to be like that for a long time? I have a feeling that the writers are going to find out a way to make her fight, but we'll see. There's a weird scene, I don't know why it's here, where this woman called Diane, she kills a female walker with an arrow and then comments how her sister had the same dress.
And then at the end of the scene, she says, yep, that was her favorite dress.
So I'm like, is this a foreshadowing of her death or something? I don't know.
I don't care about this Diana character, so I don't know why we have to feel like we need to feel something. I took it as, no matter what happens, things must go on. But then again, even that didn't even relate to the scene at all.
And also the way she acted the role, I mean, you know, the way her character was like nonchalantly, like she almost is like half asleep, like,
she's in a dream world. Like, none of this really affects her.
Yeah.
Because the fact that she kept up that thought is like she was totally daydreaming or in another place the whole time.
A whole fight just happened and
maybe
someone could have died.
That this happens all the time. So why waste my mental energy and focusing on this?
Yeah.
Things might need to get a little visceral. What the hell does that mean?
Like, yeah, that's his threat.
Yeah.
So we have the whole Jared and Richard interaction, which, I mean, there's not much to say there. It's the usual. We saw it before. But one thing that was important is that Benjamin fought back, right? The kid, mm-hmm. right? Who's mm-hmm. the kid? He fought back. And then in the fight, you know, Morgan got hit in the head. But also we see that Benjamin is kind of a rebel, right? He's like, I'm going to, if I see the moment, I'm going to react. And because mm-hmm. I'm young and I don't care, right? I just react. So that could be some foreshadowing, like, hey, look, this Benjamin kid is kind of doesn't listen to Ezekiel too much, or maybe he will in the future, but.
Well, the thing, and I find it's interesting that afterward, when Ezekiel talks to Benjamin, he says, Benjamin's like, I don't know what happened, I just fought, just because I could, and Ezekiel said, just because you can doesn't mean you should, which is also, it was a growing moment for Benjamin as a character, because now that he has, because you remember, he was like, he didn't know how to shoot a gun, or fire a bow and arrow, or anything, and now that he found his power, and the stick stuff, Ezekiel's like, with great power comes with great responsibility type speech, you know? And I think that's interesting. I hope Benjamin becomes a prominent role in this revolution because he could be the next leader.
Well, like I mentioned in the previous episode, I think Benjamin is going to be the sacrificial lamb.
I don't want him to be.
He's the person that's going to die and thus, therefore, get Ezekiel to fight, in my opinion.
I think that character is Carol, like, if anything.
You think Carol's going to die?
No, I don't think she's going to die, but, like, get him to start doing something. I don't know. I just don't want that kid to die. too many good kids die.
In this world, yes. And of course, Morgan loses his staff, and he says, someone gave it to me. Of course, that's the Eastman character who trained
him.
It
was a waste of an episode.
The waste of an episode.
Yeah.
The Ninja Turtle guy. Something I noticed in general in The Walking Dead is that there are many characters that have weapons, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Rick has his gun, and you notice that when Rick lost his gun, it was kind of like he was lost. But then he got his gun back and then he was whole again and he knew his direction. The same with Michonne. When she has her katana, she's whole and she's strong. But when she put it up
on the wall when they moved into Alexandria,
she's putting her
sword away, the fight away.
She lost herself, right? And then when she got the sword back, she was herself again. The same with Daryl. When he loses his crossbow, he's kind of lost. And now in this episode, they show...
A super dramatic version of what we're talking about, where he's just having a long shot of like looking up at him, a hero shot, we call it. We're just having the crossbow and there's like dramatic music.
Yeah, he's like, aiming down his crossbow like, yeah, I found my direction now. And also even the bad guys like Negan, right? He has his bat.
It's all symbolism. It's all an extension of themselves. Yeah, totally. I agree with that.
So I think... Morgan, him losing the staff, I think is critical in the story because, and maybe that's why this scene is here, so we can have a reason for Morgan to lose a staff. I don't know. But, you know, because now he doesn't have a staff. He's like kind of lost now. He's kind of trying to figure out, well, what do I do now with help? You know, it's kind
who
of.
Who am I?
And you see it at the end in the dialogue with Daryl that Daryl says to him directly, and let me just scroll down to my notes here quickly. Daryl says is, whatever it is you're holding on to, it's already gone, man. Wake the hell up. And mm-hmm. It's almost like figuratively like you're holding on to this dream fantasy world, but literally you were holding on to the staff and it's gone now. Like the staff and his, it's like he's lost both now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but if you can't get it mentally, then physically we have to take it away from you.
Yes. When Morgan comes back to town, and then Daryl comes up and says, oh, yeah, you went and saw the Saviors, didn't you, huh? You got beat up? They knocked you in the side of the head? Huh.
What the hell are you doing? What are you going to do about it? Like, you let them take your stuff, man.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting here like, ah, that's the way it goes. No, you don't let yourself get pushed around when you know it's wrong.
Yeah.
If they killed your family, I guess Morgan doesn't give a crap about Rick's group because... anyway. Yeah, he says, what the hell's wrong with you? Is it because he's not doing anything and he knows what and he can do something? He has an influence with King Ezekiel and he's not using it because why? He doesn't want people to get hurt. I'm sorry, last time I checked, we're in the apocalypse. People die every day. If he's not gonna die tomorrow, then he's gonna die 3 days later from some stupid way.
Yeah. And then Daryl tells Carol, tells Morgan that at the same moment. If Carol saw that and knew about Glenn and Abraham, she'd be leading them straight to the Saviors. She'd be fighting. Morgan says, yeah, I agree. And that's why she left.
So, Daryl gives Morgan the stare.
Yeah, you give him like a nasty stare. And then, of course, we have Daryl joining Richard. Just nonchalantly walking over there. And
it was basically giving him an excuse to why to get his crossbow back. And because, yeah, Daryl's frustrated, one, of being left at this stupid kingdom place where no one's doing crap, and two, wanting to fight back, Richard is a perfect opening for that kind of venting. But he really wants to just vent or just to let out his frustrations, because if he really did agree 100% with what Richard said, he would have continued fighting. But because of this, what happens later, we realize that Daryl really this is not the place for him. This is not his job to convince Ezekiel.
So what did you think of the scene of the whole mini story of him, Daryl, and Richard becoming like new best friends? See the title of the show, Best Friends. new best friends, yeah. And then Richard guiding him through this convoluted plan of
this crazy man's plan, honestly.
Getting the jump on the saviors, and then the saviors would follow the path back to Carol, kill Carol, and then Ezekiel would be
so enraged that he'll go after them.
Right.
I'm sorry. That's just like it's talk of a crazy radical, pretty much. It's the talk of a crazy radical. It has there's no logical sense to it. You can't take on a whole group.
He was just going to kill like the convoy,
a powder keg type thing, you know. And that Daryl should learn because he blew. Remember when he blew up the motorcyclist with a freaking like bazooka
rocket launcher?
How that sparked everything? If you think about it, I don't think killing a convoy and leading them to weapons cache and killing Carol is going to help start a war. If anything, it's just going to make everyone so emotionally charged and they're not going to be able to think logically about it.
Well, what if Carol was some unknown person that Daryl didn't know? Do you think he would still go along with it? Or was it just because it was Carol?
I think it strongly was just because about Carol, but if it was someone else, it wouldn't be anyone else. That's the thing. There isn't a world where it exists where that would be a thing because...
Well, maybe it was just some other person that Ezekiel cared about,
Daryl didn't know
that person.
I like to think no, because he's a good guy. He's not going to get someone killed just for the sake of his own vendetta. No, I don't think...
Like, he's not going to sacrifice...
anyone for his own personal gain, no.
Because I think he kind of agrees he's on the same level as Rick is, because I think Rick wouldn't do that either. He wouldn't sacrifice anyone.
You make sacrifices, but not to people that you care about or to people that aren't.
Or innocence, right? Innocent people.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think he would have gone along with it.
Yeah. So when Richard goes into his trailer and starts digging for all the tools and the Molotov cocktails,
awkward. Like, she's like, oh, okay, we're in your private lair of like stuff.
Well, I was wondering if that motorhome is actually his personal motorhome, or is it just some random thing he found? Because is there a reason why when he opened up one of the cupboards, there was a backpack hanging and it said Katie on it? On the back of the backpack.
Ooh, it's probably his daughter.
So I'm wondering, because why would they show that? I'm wondering if that was because they're trying to show that, he has some personal connection to this trailer.
Probably, I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe that was his daughter or something. So, it's abandoned. It doesn't move. So maybe
I can agree that's what it is.
Yeah. So yeah, it was that backpack that said Katie on it. And then... I think, that's how Daryl is, right? He'll go along with it without asking too many questions until it reaches the point where it bumps up against what he believes in or like he's against. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then he'll speak up at that moment. But when he does speak up, he'll be like strong about it, you know?
Yeah, he's not a wishy-washy character.
Yeah, yeah. And I think at that point, maybe he just wanted to just fight back at the saviors just to knock him down any way possible. Like, why would he go up to the... Because he didn't know about the final plan until he got to the road, right?
Yeah.
Because Richard didn't tell him everything. Richard just said, "Hey, we're going to strike him." But then he doesn't tell them that the whole detail until they get to the final destination. So, and then Daryl finds out, okay, well... a little trivia here.
Trivia!
Okay. there's a trailer that they hide behind, and you have no idea because you weren't even born then, but there was a movie out, it came out in the 70s called Smokey and the Bandit, and there's a trailer, so basically it's about truck drivers and how they're like racing across state lines and being chased by police. It's kind of a comedy / action thing. And one of the trucks, the semi-trailers, had this painting of this old Western scene where someone's holding up a stagecoach on a horse and painted on the side of it. And then there was that actual trailer that they had in The Walking Dead, which is kind of interesting, kind of cool.
Yeah.
And one of our listeners wrote up on our Facebook page. Her name was Shannon Torres Baynard and said, "Hey, did you all notice the semi-trailer from Smokey and the Bandit in tonight's episode?" And so give her credit to that for pointing
it out.
It's
very specific, yeah.
I actually remember seeing that movie on TV. I think it was on TV when I saw it because I was too young to go to the theater. But and at the time, I remember that these kind of movies were all the rage, like truck driver movies. Because
really?
Yeah.
There was like a phase?
Yeah, there was a fad where they were going through. And the thing that was popular on these in these movies was the CB radios that they use.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And the truckers have these CB radios and they talk to each other using codes, right? And they have their own special language. Like they would call, because Smokey is the CB word for police, right?
Mm.
So they would have all these codes in there. Breaker 19, Smokey is on there in the corner. And there was this whole phase where people were like buying CB radios and talking to each other using CB radios. I remember a friend of mine had one. And I would go to his house and he would be like talking on a CB radio to other people. And that was the thing.
It was like cell phones.
Yeah. It was a phase that the US people were going through. But yeah, so Smoking the Bat. And then they came out multiple sequels. And then there was another one called Cannonball Run and a bunch of other movies that were in the same vein. So anyway, a bit of trivia there.
I'm learning new things every day. I can't believe there's a whole culture that I'm not aware of.
Well, it came lived. And went.
Yeah, like that you've lived through that I don't know about. And I think it's awesome.
Yeah, the 70s were kind of a... You know, personally, my favorite period in time... Well, basically because I lived through it, right?
Yeah.
My favorite is the 70s and then the 80s. The 70s less, but basically the 70s and the 80s. Like each decade has a different meaning for me in my life.
That is so interesting. You live through what is now like the most significant. It's what people our age are millennials romanticize about the 80s and the 70s the most. Forget the 90s. Like screw the 90s. There's a hot mess of a decade. Like,
well,
like,
not really, because what I'm saying, the 70s was my like in my early childhood. So I have fond memories. I love the 70s music because when I was a kid, I used to go to sleep with the radio in my bedside listening to all these 70s hits. And then, so that kind of ingrained my growing up and all the 70s movies. And the disco, I love disco. And then in the 80s I was kind of in high school and there was the 80s music and I lived through that. And then the 90s had a different emotion for me was because when I met mom and then that's like we were dating in the 90s and we're going to clubs and stuff. So I was older. So 90s are cool too. And I love some of the music there. I'm just saying that every decade was different. Had a different kind of
because of your feeling. Different places in life.
Yeah, it represents a part of my life as I was growing up. And they have a different impact on me, right?
For me, I know I'm not very old, so I can't really reminisce too much. But there's nothing. The early 2000s... Because obviously I don't remember 97, I was born then, but in the early 2000s was very like, is where I was growing up. And so the biggest things were for me is like the technology. That's when I was first introduced to technology.
Computers.
Like that's all that. Yeah. Playing computer games with Alexander and the remember. And then like playing with your first cell phones that looked like home phones, just like cordless. And growing up then. And then in high school, was like is it teens now? What do you call this? The 20s? No, like the early 10s?
Yes.
10s is like growing up and being an actor now. It's like this is the last 2 years is the coming of age stuff. So I don't know what the 20s and 30s is going to look like for me. So yeah, then so Richard tells Daryl the plan. Daryl's like, who is the war, the woman, or the who is she? Who? And then it says Carol, and he's like, rah! It like hits him. I know that was a great description of what happened. So they get into a fight.
And then of course, as they get into a fight, the saviors go by, and this is the final decree that Daryl gives
to Richard.
To Richard.
She gets hurt. She dies. She catches a fever. She gets taken out by a walker. She gets hit by lightning. Anything happens to her, I'll kill you.
That was funny.
What if she dies from pneumonia or something?
She gets a fever.
Or she gets a hangnail. She gets a hangnail. How does that count?
You did. She gets struck by lightning.
Yeah, so now Richard has to be the protector of Carol because, you know, he doesn't want anything to happen to Carol because then...
Hello, yeah.
Daryl's going to get him. Well, I like that because it just shows, you know, how passionate Daryl is about protecting Carol and how he cares about her.
And that's what this show is founded on, is the family bonds between these characters. And even when they're separated, how they so fearlessly fight for them is what we love about the show and what we've been missing because of freaking Rosita. Yeah. God damn it. She's so angsty. We'll talk about her later. Anyway.
Well, Daryl, so the fact that Daryl protects Carol, I think, is important to note in this episode, I guess. And protects her in twice, actually. First of all, from Richard's antics. And second of all, protects Carol from telling her the truth at the end. So she protects her both times. I think it's important because if you look at Daryl's history the last few episodes. Remember last episode it was Angry Daryl?
Yeah.
We made a point of that. Say, hey, Angry Daryl this episode.
Mm-hmm.
He was so angry, he just wanted to lash out on the Saviors no matter what. Like he was like really passionate about fighting back with the Saviors, and now he's got his chance to strike at the Saviors and he says no to himself. Like, no, I'm not going to do it because that's how much he cares for Carol.
Yeah, Rosita needs to have that moment. She needs to be on the verge of like destruction and then realize, oh my gosh, if I do this, then
it's gonna
I'm screwed.
Up. It's going to, yeah.
Blow up on my face.
But I think the only reason I don't think Daryl cares about the consequences until it affects, I mean, in this case, until it affects Carol, right? And because he cares about her. So I don't know. I'm bringing back the issue of what if Daryl didn't know it was like if it was someone unknown, would he still do it? But I don't know. I'm not sure about this because it's not really clear. I'm not 100% sure Daryl's character would care if it was someone else.
I'm sure he would. I'm pretty sure he would.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's in his nature to really just sacrifice somebody because he's that upset. I think it still would say have the same impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's a really messed up thing to do. Like, oh, who cares? She'll fend for herself. Like, that's, you don't do that.
Yeah, Richard was pretty mean in his language, like, oh, she might as well be dead. Like, someone's living on their own like that. Might as well, she's like already dead.
Well, like, Daryl's a loner too, so he would understand that.
Yeah, and don't forget, Carol's been on her own a while, even before she went to that house. Remember, she was on her own for a while, and then she came back and helped the group and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I like Daryl. I like how they're showing Daryl's commitment to Carol. I like that. Okay, so let's jump into the controversial scene with our group, Rick, and the junk people.
Yeah. Let's talk about them for a second.
It's so dramatic. Like, okay, they captured them in the previous episode, and now all of a sudden they're inside the garbage.
For 30 minutes, they're walking around and lining up in some strategic circle, like making everything so confusing. I'm like, okay. Sorry,
They form two concentric circles for those of you that are into geometry. And
wow. Yeah, everyone's into geometry for free time.
I just want to point out because everything is on purpose, right? The everything that, obviously, they did it to show something to us that, hey, this group is organized. They're forming circles. They've practiced this many times before. You know, we have to surround them. And you notice that the leader was just melded into the background. And then all of a sudden, the leader, whose name is Jadis, steps forward. And it's like, oh, okay, that's the leader. Because like you didn't know who it was, right? You just saw this group. And maybe that's trying to show us that, hey, this group is more of a community than a single leading person. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, they do have a leader. It's Jadis. But
they're more of a collective. Are you a collective or does one lead?
So what do you think of the speaking thing?
It gives me so... Okay, do you remember that movie Cloud Atlas?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, like, one of the big... And I read the book, too, and I stopped reading because I couldn't freaking understand it because of this reason. Because it took place so far into the future of Earth, English was, like, a completely different language. There was so much slang from all different kinds of cultures thrown in there because as time goes on and if there's apocalypse happens, because I think in Cloud Atlas, that's what happened, apocalypse. There's no education. There's no real education, so... Words are just passed down generation from generation or over time just to get things across. And I think, I don't know if this is an intentional thing or just a thing that's happened over the years, but they just sound like they don't know how to speak, or they just speak things that are necessary.
Worst case, I would say 3 years have passed, right? Like in 3 years,
this is a choice. This is a choice.
You don't lose all communication abilities.
All the adjectives and helping verbs. Like, you don't lose all of that and the pronouns. I think it's because they're just stripped. They're very stripped in who they are.
Well, they stripped down to the basics.
Which is really hipster if you think about it. Like, we're in the apocalypse. We don't need any poetic language because we're all just about survival. So let's strip all the artistic stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't need to be clear, super explanatory. We just need to use the basic words. I don't know. I just don't buy it, and I don't see the point of it. Like, what are they trying to show us? It doesn't show us anything.
It just causes communication barriers and makes Rick ask, like, what the hell is your name? Like, who are you people? Like, it just gives a lot of questions.
They only speak when necessary, and they use the minimal amount of words, right?
Which I guess is how they live their life, you know, because speaking, I learned this from watching the movie Arrival. People's languages reflect who they are and what is necessary. So if you have a language with a lot of colorful words, it's because you technically have a lot of emotions to feel. So if you're in a group that like this, who are, they're scavengers, and you know, they're a collective and there is no individuality, why would their language not be the same, you know?
Mm. Some people describe this kind of whole scene of our group meeting these quote unquote aliens as some kind of episode from Star Trek. I think even one of our listeners posted on Facebook saying it's kind of like Star Trek, because, you know, that's what they did in Star Trek. They would go to these planets, meet these weird civilizations, had their own language. They spoke weird. They had these weird customs. And then, you know, and you're going through these trials, like they have to put you through a test, and then if you get survived, then they'll be friends with you. Like, it's weird. It seems like a Star Trek.
Whole
like
different worlds. Yeah.
It seems like an episode of Star Trek.
They live in a trash junkyard that's completely, like when he was on top of the thing, it was looked completely different.
It's like another world.
For miles. You know, yeah, exactly.
Which, I think that's, side note, how could that whole junk pile be hidden and no one can see it? But anyway, whatever. And then someone pulls Rick, Tamiel. Where did they come with these words? These names.
Probably, I'm pretty sure they were not born with these names. Okay.
Says this. Okay, this thing. And I think she knows, because I think she was the one. Oh, yeah. Actually, it was mentioned online that Tamiel was the one that actually kidnapped Gabriel and knocked him over the head and got all the stuff. So she knows who Rick was. She says they own their lives and asks if they want to buy them back. Rick tells her they have one of their people. So they talk about Gabriel, right? And then they bring out Gabriel. And then, of course, she explains, we're the one who took the boat supplies. The boat things you took got taken.
Okay.
So they go through dialogue.
They didn't put the supplies there, but they were watching it, waiting for somebody to help them get it.
Oh,
right?
You're talking about the boat, right?
Yeah.
Okay, this made no friggin' sense. How devoted are you to your cultural principles that you will see a boat with supplies, but you will prefer to starve and like not have weapons or not investigate it, because your principles are, what is it? We take, we don't bother.
Yeah, you don't cause problems.
We take, we don't bother. Even though you have the needs. Like, you can't just go to the store. Like, you can't choose. They're choosing to have this weird lifestyle.
Hipsters. It's unnecessary. Like, people choose to be vegan, no offense. Or, like, have some special dietary way that doesn't benefit them. Or, no, like,
I'm okay with that if you're in the present world where you have the luxury to do so. But when you're in the apocalypse and you have no friggin' choice, you're starving and you need supplies.
Okay, here's another example. Like hipsters who use typewriters instead of actually using Word. Okay?
I disagree with that. Oh, okay. Now you went there. Okay, we're gonna go there. How about you wanted for Christmas? You wanted a
Hey!
You wanted a record player. For Christmas, well, I don't know if you wanted one, but you always wanted a record player for Christmas.
Yeah, I always wanted one.
Yeah, so then I got you a record player for Christmas, and you went all crazy on record players, on records now. What's up with that?
Well, it's not endangering me. I could still eat food, Dad. This is not the same thing. This is technology preference. This is not how you live your life, Dad, okay?
I refuse to use a cell phone, but I will listen to records. No, okay. Well,
I use a cell phone. What are you talking about?
I know. I'm just joking.
There's no foundation to your claims.
I just think it's interesting that you're listening to records. I've totally abandoned records. And
because that's you, Dad. You're a computer engineer. This is that your job is to go forward into the future. My job as an actress, we're studying a 400-year-old man's writings, okay? We're all historians here, actors. We don't care about the future. We just want to preserve the past.
Well, one thing I do have to say, though, one thing I don't like about technology, the way it's going, is you don't have photographs on paper as much as you do in the past, right? Now everything's digital and it's all virtual. Like, it's nice to know that there's a book there. You can just give it to someone. There's my photos. No matter, you don't have to like log into iCloud or something.
Or somebody hacks it.
Yeah.
You know, your stuff.
Yeah. You lose, something happens, you know, but it's right there. It's like, hey, there's the photos. Flip through them.
Take a look. You are physical copies of my memories.
Yeah. I miss that.
Oh, wow, Dad, I didn't know you had those kind of feelings, because I remember saying that, Jasmine, reading, and Mom, reading books are a waste of time. Get it all on the Kindle. When we're like, no, we want to feel the book in our hand and not have it to the iCloud or some magical plastic device. It's not the same. It's the same thing with pictures, Dad. You just don't know it.
Yeah, I'm on the book side, I've kind of gone towards audiobooks. I'm kind of...
I can't focus with audiobooks.
I'm kind of digging that. Okay.
Anyway, back to the Jadis hipster group.
Yes.
The hipster group.
Yes. We see Gabriel acting a little crazy. All of a sudden, Gabriel... Well, they start fighting, right?
Yeah.
They said, no, forget it. We're not going to do what you want. And they start punching them out, which I don't understand. Why would they would attack them if they're just there talking? It's like, okay, we don't agree with you. We're just going to do what? Kill you? I don't know. Were they going to kill them?
Who knows? Like, I don't know with this group. They're so unpredictable. Well, I think they probably would have just...
What was the outcome of this fight if Gabriel hadn't done that? Like, would they have killed them? That's why this whole story arc makes no sense to me. Like, it's there's so many holes in this plot. It's like crazy. Anyway, and Gabriel all of a sudden grabs the knife from one of the...
And knows exactly what to say. Maybe he picked up that they're scavengers and that they only talk if it has anything to do with... Because, like... What is it for us? What's in it for us? What's in it for us?
Yeah.
So he probably picked up on that, like, okay, well, they have stuff.
He tells Jadis,
you can have half of it.
Yeah, he tells Jadis the saviors have lots of things that they want. So he's basically saying that, hey, you guys want stuff? The saviors have lots of stuff. And if they join them together, they will be rewarded. You will be rewarded more than they can imagine. Like, the way he says it, it's like...
Because he's playing into their whole little crazy shenanigans that they got going on.
So I guess he's trying to play into that.
Yeah, completely.
And then Jada says,
"Very smart.
Okay, this is great that you're saying, yeah, we'll be rewarded, but how about now? We want something now.
All this is talk. We need like a
we want something now. Do you have something?
I want a deposit. Yeah.
Do you want something? Do you have something on you right now? You can just hand it over, and then we call it good.
But obviously, Rick's group, as we've talked about, I put this in my notes too, as we talked about before in the past, is that what they can trade with is
willpower, like, and guerrilla warfare.
Willpower and warfare and fighting.
The smarts and stuff like that.
It didn't work so much last time.
With the hilltop.
Yeah. But it's what they have. It's what they're good at. They're such a strong... Remember when at the prison, how they're like, they have strategic poses and how they like fight off the walkers, and they're very militant and they're very efficient in how they handle things, especially like... At the hospital with Beth, they had a whole plan on how it goes down and stuff. 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work out, but...
Well, that's pretty bad. 9 out of 10, not working out.
Yeah.
Well, so you're saying basically that the thing that our group has to barter with is their skills and their abilities and their brains.
Yeah.
They don't actually have things, physical things. And that's
actually is powerful, because they will never be swayed by stuff.
And that never runs out, right?
You always have that.
You are who you are. You have your abilities. You don't lose them. You never lose them. Okay, so Jada says, I want something now. And then
she says, She says, Temuel, Brion, show Rick up, up, up. I'm like, oh my God. I literally wanted to barf in my mouth. It was so tacky.
Up, up, up. It's like, go take Rick to the top of the garbage heap and show him the walker. No, go up, up, up. Okay, let's go up, up, up.
Are we 5 years old?
We're going to fly up to the sky. Okay.
I think I just show them the place, show them the special place or say something like, they're like up, up, up. It's like over the top.
It was almost like, yeah, if Rick lit up a stick of fire, everybody would like, oh, fire, oh, fire,
fire, fire,
fire. Oh God. And they would all like pray down, bow down on their knees and pray like,
but they're also wearing super hipster clothes too, like boots and long trench coats.
They're all matching.
Like, where'd they find this stuff up? This is totally a hipster group. Like, even her haircut. Okay.
I noticed that when Rosita flew up and Aaron and Rick were trying to say, calm down, Aaron was looking at Rosita in a certain way, like looking at her, like, calm down. Like, why are you so aggressive? I just noticed that. I didn't. So maybe Aaron and Rosita are going to.
Wait, when? Wait, I missed that.
Well,
at each other when.
They were like, Aaron was looking at her like, why are you so aggressive? Like, because when the group started beating them, like Rosita was like ready to fight back. But Aaron and Rick were like, trying to calm things down. Like, we're not here to fight,
Because Aaron and Rick understand that these people we can work with them. We don't always have to fight. You have to think with your head before you think with your heart. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that Rosita has. She's so grief stricken and in guilt or something. I don't know what it is, but if they need to like keep her off of the streets, cause this is not helping. She's like a freaking animal. Go through people's garbage,
And Rosita says to Gabriel, are these your new best friends? Which is the show title, the best friends.
Oh yeah. Cause she thought that he was the one that betrayed them.
Yeah.
I'm like, Rosita, you should be the last person to say anything because you made a bullet that ended up getting people killed and kidnapped. Everybody who betrays, you have.
Right. Well,
Gabriel tried to have a talk with her, to talk her out of it. Anyway.
But you'd think that what happened, what transpired with Rosita, though.
Do you think she'd mellow out?
Yeah, you'll think she'd learn something from that and say, "Hey, I lashed out, and look what happened. So maybe I should change my tactic."
No, because she's obviously immature in that way, where she can't learn from her mistakes. She's too stubborn.
Do you think now that Abraham's gone, maybe that was what was keeping her like in check?
And now maybe Abraham's she's gone, actually 16 years old and she doesn't know how to deal with herself.
So Rick goes up to the top of the hill. And then she says, all of us here since the change,
we don't bother. Things grow harder. We open cans. Sometimes inside's rotten. Times past. Things are changing again. So maybe we change. Maybe. We need to know that you're real with this and you're worth it.
Not we need to know. It's like,
sorry. I'm so educated. I just forgot that this is how it's written. Need to know you're real with this and you're worth it.
And then she throws Rick over the trash. but she explains kind of in this brief...
her history, basically.
The history of the group in a nutshell. And also the fact that because their tradition is, we take, we don't bother. People would say, well, if you take and you don't bother, then why in the end did you go ahead with Rick and are going to attack the saviors, right? Yeah. So she's explaining here why. It's like things are getting tough. Some of the food that we're finding inside these cans are rotten, so it's harder for us to find food and keep scavenging.
We notice that things are changing in the world because of this.
Yeah, so things are changing again, so maybe we have to change. In other words, maybe we're not just going to take and not bother. Maybe we're going to start having to bother, like...
which is what happened.
Attacking the saviors. And I think this is kind of explaining their thinking of why, in the end, she agrees to go with Rick. But...
because they know that there's a change.
But she wants to make sure that the fact that they're going to go against their tradition of not bothering other people, it has to be worth it. It has to be a worthy cause, right?
Which actually makes sense. I don't disagree with this. And I think it's funny how Rick, I feel like based on what he responded after he killed that walker, was that, were you waiting for someone to be the chosen one or something? And she said, no, that's Winslow. Like, because it's all logical. There is no like spiritual BS attached to any of this stuff. It's more of like, well, we have to adapt, and we're adapting, and we want to know that you were making an investment in you. So we want to know if you're actually it.
They just want to make sure that these people are the real deal. And by throwing Rick in there, and the fact that he survived shows that, you know, he is the real deal. One of our listeners in the comments said, when Rick threw took the keyboard and bashed it against the walker, it's like, oh, he was a keyboard warrior.
Oh my gosh. Quote, so unquote, cheesy.
Keyboard warrior. Literally, you know, because he took the keyboard to fight. I'm just
thanks,
explaining.
Dad.
I'm just explaining
you.
It. I'm just explaining it. And of course, this scene is similar to when Luke in Return of the Jedi, he was fighting the monster in the pits, remember, in Jabba's palace.
Mm-hmm.
And he survived out of that. It was kind of the same kind of thing. And
I also thought of it as the trash compactor.
In Star Wars.
You know what I mean?
That's what I was closing in on them.
Uh-huh.
Because in referencing Star Trek and the old Star Trek, I just imagined James Kirk being thrown into this, and he's like battling for his life. And then that cheesy Star Trek music comes on. And then Kirk does a jump kick or whatever, and kicks the monster back, and you know, finally
I want to watch the shows again.
Yeah, he's fighting some beast on some planet. So anyway, it's just
if I could get on a TV show that's like a cult classic like that, even if it's crap, I'd be set. Like, I'd be okay. I could retire. I think after he comes out victorious.
Yeah, I personally, I think this whole post Walker fight scene could be completely removed altogether, right? Because we kind of get it. They need to find guns in exchange, because that was their exchange, right? You need to bring us guns. And we already know, because we're smart audience members, we already know why Rick was laughing, right? Was smiling, because he's happy that he found people to help. So we already know all of this.
We have it spelled out for us.
And we already know
that Gabriel didn't betray them.
Yes, because of what previously transpired. And we already know that Tara knows that there's guns somewhere in another community. So all of these things we already know. So the only purpose of this scene was to remind the audience of all of these talking points, which
I felt insulted by.
I did. I felt it was just like spoon feeding us information. It's like Gabriel is asking Rick, why did you laugh? Right. And then Rick says, of course, he says, bringing it back to Gabriel, someone showed me enemies can become friends. Basically,
that's so, like, the writing in this is so bad. Like, it used to be really good where you'd show it, you wouldn't tell it.
Yeah. So basically he's saying that, because you taught me that I hated you before, because we were enemies. I hated you, Gabriel. You were
a coward.
Yeah, but now we're friends. Well, not best friends, but we're kind of friends, because we have a common goal, right? So just like you and I can change, maybe other people can become friends, you know? So I don't know. I mean, it's a good kind of closing the circle between Gabriel and Rick. But I think it was just kind of heavy-handed, you know? And then, you know, about the guns thing, Tara, there was this thing about Rick says, hey, Tara, maybe you know, you've been out there. Maybe you can tell us where not to look. Like, really?
You've been out there the longest of us. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and Tara's like,
oh, my God. No.
And Tara's
oh, wow, Rick, you're talking to me. You actually want me to take the lead on this.
No, I think it was mostly to remind us, hey, Tara knows and she's not telling. Because we know Tara knows where the guns are, but Rick doesn't know. So it's kind of like, you know. And then we have this whole tiff between Tara and Rosita, right? So Tara and Rosita have an argument. So what did you think of Tara's... I guess Tara was saying the right things, right?
I think...
And did that actually explain Rosita's attitude? Not really.
No. Honestly, I think it was very immature what she was saying. It didn't make any freaking sense. I don't even remember, but I just remember when she said, grow up, and walked away. I was like,
No, she was like arguing, and then says, grow up. And then she walks away, like, okay.
I'm like, I honestly think that I don't think even the actress that plays Rosita, Christian, understands what she's saying, because it doesn't feel like it makes sense. I really think that this is a writing thing, and because I the reason why I keep picking on Rosita is because there's her motivations are unfounded. Like, I don't understand. I'm confused as to why she's saying what she's saying. I don't even feel like I'm not even convinced she's convinced about what she's saying. I don't know if you could pick that up or not, but I just I think
she's too more aggressive than she should be. Like,
taking on a negative objective.
Well, mainly because I haven't seen. I'm not convinced of the source of her anger. Like,
yeah.
I am a little bit, because I understand, you know, Abraham was killed.
But it still doesn't lend a hand to anything that she's talking about, because, like, it just doesn't, like, the reactions to what has happened, the consequences to her actions are not getting through to her, and she's not, it hasn't changed her at all, in a way.
She's not adjusting, yeah, to the new reality.
Not even into it in a negative way, because it's not even making a choice. It's staying on the same path, just putting anger to it.
Yeah.
So I don't understand. Yeah,
I could see how it makes her more resolved and more committed to the cause, but what it's doing is basically making her a radical that's just doing whatever she wants on her own without consideration of the group. It's like she doesn't care about the group at this point. She's like not a free spirit, but that's not the right term. But
on her own, she's just independent. Like, she's just
an independent vigilante kind of person that doesn't really care. But on the other hand, she is taking advantage of the group's good fortune, though. Like, if they hadn't gone to this group, if Gabriel...
Exactly, she wouldn't have an admission.
Yeah, if Gabriel hadn't brought them there, then she wouldn't have been able to have this idea of, hey, I'm going to go get more guns. Well, we're the ones who came up with the... Rick was the one who came up with the deal, not you. And now you're going to say, oh, I'm going to go get guns by myself. Okay. So some of the logic doesn't make sense of that, what that character is doing. Yeah, so the one last scene in the junkyard before we move on to Carol and Daryl is Rick, as he's stumbling along, which, by the way, he got his hand... Rick got a spike through the hand. That must be a problem, don't you think?
It's a little problem.
With tetanus and, you know, stuff like that.
And it's just mixed up with the zombie stuff. I'm like, I'm sorry, but how do they not get infected on a daily basis?
Yeah, and he's in a garbage pit.
All of them should be dead by disease by now.
So Rick grabs a metal cat statue and hands it to Michonne and says, this is for the one you lost. So if you don't remember, way back, there was an episode called Clear. You know where they went to that town?
Oh, and of course I remember. That was so cute. It's like a bonding moment.
Yeah, and he finds... Michonne goes with Carl into this bar and then finds this cat statue, which was kind of cute. Mm-hmm. And then she eventually loses it because she left it at the prison. So Rick got this metal cat statue to replace the one she lost. But that's a throwback to that episode.
Which also signifies a little bit of hope for the future, that they can make jokes like this when before they were so depressing and sad all the time.
Now things are looking up. They're getting their
at least that's what the writers want us to think.
They're getting their cat statues back.
Yeah.
So let's jump to Carol, and we have a scene where, you know, Carol, again, people are going to Carol's house, and Carol doesn't want to be bothered, but she comes out anyway because apparently she doesn't like talking to people, or like she doesn't want to be bothered, she doesn't want to interact, but she still comes out, right? So she could have peeked through the window and says, oh, there's so-and-so, so I'm not going to go, but she goes outside to confront them, which... kind of leads me to believe that she actually
doesn't want to be alone. Yeah.
She doesn't want to be alone, but anyway.
They know that too.
And then
that's why they came with Cobbler. Come on.
And then we have the funny scene where Jerry hands her Cobbler. What do you think of Jerry?
He's like, I love him. He's so cute. He's like a little, like, aw, Jerry. Oh, that's Jerry.
He's always like, think he has an upbeat attitude, and he's kind of a little kid inside a little bit, right? Like when Rick was telling the story about the king who buried the gold under the rock. Mm-hmm. Like when he said, when the rock was removed, there was gold. He's like, oh, cool. There's gold. Like he's like going into the story like he's like a little kid, right?
Uh-huh.
So Jerry hands the cobbler, and then when she takes it,
he's like, it's like really innocent.
Yeah, which means that he's going to get killed. But Carol pretends not to want to talk, but then, you know, they leave and then she goes, sits down and reads a book. Oh gosh, she's reading a book. Okay. Carol's reading a book.
Yeah, this is what you wanted, Carol, huh? Die reading a book.
And she was sitting by the window. When I was watching this, I told Mom, I said, I don't think she should be sitting by the window.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but you're in the apocalypse.
A walker could come by, or like even somebody walking by could shoot you through the window. Anyway. And then she hears a knock on the door and she's like, oh, I told you guys to go away. She gets up and it's Daryl. Mm-hmm.
And they have they cry and hug and it's like, aw.
This is what Daryl says to her.
Jesus took us to the kingdom. Morgan said you just left. I was out here. I saw you. Why'd you go?
That made you cry, huh?
Why'd you go? Like the way he said it was like so broken.
Yeah, because it felt like
he felt like he was abandoned. Like, why?
Yeah, she did something to him, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know that, you know, we're close and you know how I feel, and why would you do that? Like, he felt hurt directly, you know? He later realized that it was, you know, she did it for herself to protect herself from what was going on. But yeah, I think that was a great moment because of all the history that they had, and it paid off, right?
There. Didn't she leave before?
She's left multiple times.
Oh yeah, when Rick kicked her out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that was
just tough.
It was a touching moment. And then Carol says, you know, she had to leave.
Yeah, and like we said before, she just couldn't deal with it. Everyone getting hurt. And then, like, I like your note here. Daryl prioritizes friendship over war strategy. He cares too much about her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, her relief is just enormous and so, like, real when Daryl says, you know, look, everyone's fine.
Yeah, so this is the clip where, you know, Carol explains what's going on a little bit in her head.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't lose any of them. I couldn't lose you. I couldn't kill them. I could. I would. If they hurt any of our people, any more of them, that's what I would do. And there wouldn't be anything left of me after that.
I want to go build a fire now. All that crackling wood. She knows what she would do, because that's who she is. She would go out and kill the bad people, right? The saviors or whatever. But she doesn't want to be put in that position, because if she does have to go to that point, then she would lose herself. Like, I feel that there's like a line that if it gets crossed,
mm-hmm.
and she crosses it, that she won't be able to come back to who she is anymore.
There's she won't care about life the same way anymore, because she's been taking so many people's lives.
She'd be totally broken, you know? And she'd be this other person that she doesn't want to be, like, uncaring and cruel and mean. You know what I'm saying? Like, she doesn't want to be that person, and that's what she's afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
So
I just think that this is, it's what we were basically thinking and what she was dealing with this whole time. Like the conflict, like, should I kill? Should I not? Who will I be after this? And that notebook she had with all the, what we thought, I'm assuming, have all the people she killed mm-hmm. from different places. So we know it's taken a toll on her, and this would be the breaking point.
Well, but we want her to fight though, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't want her to be not Carol, you know? But I do want her to be a badass, just without all the baggage.
Well, maybe Daryl can help her maintain herself, who she is.
Yeah.
Because after that scene, she says, tell me, and she's crying, and like, tell me, Daryl. Like, did anyone get hurt? Like, she's almost...
What are you supposed to say?
Almost to the point where she wants to know, but she doesn't want to know. Like, because that's why she's crying, because she's, like, anticipating the bad news, right? It's like, mm-hmm. okay, I'm asking this question.
But I feel like I know the answer.
I feel like I know the answer. And I feel that even though Daryl said everything's cool, because he kind of hesitated a little bit. He didn't like was straight out and he didn't.
And it wasn't very detailed either.
So I'm wondering if Carol is thinking, I know Daryl's lying to me, but I'm just going to grab onto it and just pretend it's true and just move on. You know what I'm saying? Because because Carol's smart, right? She's not going to buy Daryl's attitude, lie. You know what I'm saying? So I just have a feeling that Carol really knows the truth, but she's kind of blocking it out.
Because she can't handle it. She even knows she can't handle the truth.
Exactly.
But I don't think she thinks that he's lying. I think she truly believes it. I mean, if she does, it's not in the forefront of her mind.
Yeah.
Because she can't handle it.
She's in a really terrible state.
She doesn't know what she wants because she wants people to be around, but she doesn't want to be involved. She just, because it's like those two sides of her are battling each other constantly. This calm and peaceful woman who just wants to be around people she cares about. And then there's this fighter who will fight and die to save the people she loves. And that means crossing the line, like burning bodies back in season 4 and killing as many people as possible if it means to survive. Like when Maggie and her were trapped in that slaughterhouse, all the crap, they burned they set fire to a whole a convoy of people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even know what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, she will do it if she has to.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see how the show makes this transformation from where Carol is now into being part of the fight. Because I think in order to make this work, I think she has to change and be one of the fighters. Because where else could it go? Like, are they going to let Carol be in the state and then get eaten by a walker and then die? No, they're going to make her come back and fight. Maybe she'll die during the fight or something, but at least they're going to show her as the Carol that we want to see.
Yeah.
I'm hoping.
I know, because we've wanted the Carol back for so long, and it's like, it just kept going, getting worse and worse and worse.
Yep. Yeah.
So that wraps up Carol and Daryl's interaction, because he leaves afterward, and you know, it's a really sad and touching goodbye.
And then he was gonna walk away without hugging her. Come on. So he walks and then he turns back and hugs her. Like,
typical Daryl fashion.
Like, I'm cool.
Back at the kingdom.
So back at the kingdom,
Daryl.
Back at the kingdom, we have again trying to figure out, well, what's gonna happen between Morgan and how we're gonna get Ezekiel to fight and stuff like that. So we see Daryl sitting by Shiva and the cage, and Morgan appears telling him he's good with her and Ezekiel would be impressed. So here we see Daryl bonding with Shiva, and I think there is some kind of a reflection going on there, like both of them are kind of in the same situation, or there are some similarities, like why would they show Shiva like liking him and being, because basically they're kind of similar. For one, you know, Shiva's in a cage, and don't forget, Daryl used to be in a cage when he was locked up with Negan.
Plus, Daryl's also a wolf, too, if you think about it. He's kind of an animal in his own right.
Yeah, he's wild and predatory, just like Shiva is. Mm-hmm. And so they're showing kind of the different sides of Daryl. So Daryl is, like, on the same level of Rick in this show. They're, like, very strong characters.
They're very and they're emotionally diverse, and they're so they're 4D characters. There's so many sides to them. They're not just like Rosita, who just seems to have one emotion, or even Aaron, who's always the peacekeeper. You know.
Well, I like Aaron though. Don't pick on Aaron.
No. There's nothing wrong with those characters. No, there's not. It's just like story structure wise, there's always 2D characters and 3D characters, and the 3D characters are usually the leading characters. The 2D characters, both on the good side and the bad side, support the leading characters. Aaron seems to be developing more of a personality because he keeps referring to his life back home with his husband or his partner.
Yeah, he's trying to fight, not fight, but he's trying to figure out
what he wants and what he stands for.
The two sides of his world, like fighting and helping Rick, and also the love of his life, you know, back at Alexandria. So he's trying to, you know, play those two things out. So Daryl and Morgan have this thing. Daryl says to Morgan, hey, you know, what you're looking for, it's already gone, so wake the hell up.
Yeah.
But Morgan says, Daryl, how about you? You didn't tell Carol the truth, because Carol could have helped us fight, but you didn't tell her the truth to bring her onto the fight. So you're holding on to something. What are you holding on to?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. What fantasy world are you trying to portray to Carol that everything's cool? Right. So it's like, don't just look at me. You know, how about you?
Look towards yourself. Look yourself in the mirror. Man in the mirror.
So,
pretty much. And yeah, and because they both really care about Carol. Morgan, especially recently, also cares about Carol and respects her so much. So they're the same way where they want to protect her.
Yeah. But I think Morgan has a fight. He has to come to grips because he's been for many episodes and many seasons now, he's been fighting this peace, right? Discussion of, you know, peace first before fight. Everyone's life is precious, Daryl. So he said that in the past. So we need to figure out, or Morgan needs to figure out how he's going to get over this and get into the fight.
He lost his weapon, so now he has to pick up a gun.
Mm. Or maybe he'll just chop off a limb off a tree and just make a new staff or something. Or maybe Benjamin will make one for him because he's such a nice guy.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so there's a lot of open questions. So the Morgan's a question mark, Carol's a question mark. So we have the peaceful question marks, which is Carol and Morgan. Mm-hmm. But we also have the question marks on Richard's side. What's Richard going to do? And what's Rosita going to do? So they're the opposites.
Rosita needs to get a slap on the face, basically. Like, bottom line, she needs someone to wake her up and let her know.
Wake up!
Maybe it's going to be Tara, because she was the one that was challenging her anyway about her wanting to move on and go somewhere else.
Yeah, Tara gave her a... told her off there, gave her a beatdown, yeah.
Yeah, Daryl is going back to the hilltop to get ready for the fight. And the kingdom gates open, and Daryl walks out dramatically, who looks back at Morgan, who then looks to Richard, and then... And then the gate closed and the episode ends.
Yep, that's it.
That's pretty much it.
The main kind of thing that we have moving the plot forward is that Daryl left and he's on the move. And also we have another group that can help. And it's kind of the next thing we are going to do in the future is to find the guns. The question is, for our group, is where do we find guns? That's the kind of the goal.
And a lot of them, apparently.
Yeah, and from the preview I saw of the next episode, unfortunately, we're not going to see that.
Oh my gosh, okay.
I think we're going to go a little bit back in time, and we're going to look at Daryl's escape and how that happened. Like, because we were always questioning, well, how did Daryl escape? Who helped him? This and that. And I think in the next episode, that is all going to be revealed.
We haven't heard anything from Negan yet.
Yeah, because we heard him on the walkie-talkie saying, hey, Daryl's on the loose. We need to find him. But we don't know what the outcome of that is. So The Walking Dead better step up its game.
Step up their game, or else the Walking Dead Girl podcast is going to be very upset. Like, they're going to...
I mean, even in the previous episode, I mean, it was okay, but there were some scenes that were kind of over the top.
Or, like, just unnecessary.
Like for example, when they came up to the roadblock with the dynamite.
Yeah.
They were like, someone put the dynamite here. I wonder why. Oh, it's because
thanks
they want
to... telling us, like, we couldn't figure it out ourselves.
Exactly. So some of the dialogue is kind of too explanatory.
I was watching this thing on YouTube. This YouTube channel has, they study screenwriting. Mm. And it's like a kind of like tutorial for screenwriters. And they were analyzing this movie, good story writing, like Gone Girl. No, like Ex Machina. And how it was so... did it so well when they didn't tell the... They showed it was really cool. They showed, like, footage from the movie and then the actual screenplay. Mm. And how, like, say, for the beginning, it's not spoiling anything, but instead of telling them, oh, if you're familiar with the movie, oh, I won this competition. I'm going to meet this really, really rich man who lives at this place who won't even get a call, phone call by... He won't... The CEO or the president couldn't even contact him and let him... All this, like, exposition... And that was in the script. In the movie, it just was like, so when are we going to get there? Oh, we've been flying over his estate for two hours. Mm. It just lets you know already that it just keeps you intrigued. So when you actually meet this person, you actually want to know who this person is. You're not already told everything about what's happening.
Yeah.
It makes you curious. It makes you invested.
Yeah. And you find things out from other sources, not directly from the dialogue.
And the thing was, they said is like, don't put all the dots, give the audience all the dots, but don't connect but don't connect them.
Let them connect it in their heads.
Exactly. And that's what this you're talking about here is like, you feel like they're just telling you everything. They're connecting the dots for you, which makes the show interesting.
It kind of takes me out of the story sometimes, because it's like, yeah, I can see that. Like, don't, because I feel like it's not natural dialogue. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. So anyway, let's read some comments from our Facebook. Yeah. Let's read some comments from Facebook. So you want to read
Cindy Patton says, mm-hmm. Oh, you want to read the first one?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Cindy Patton says, I have mixed emotions about this one. I feel like they stuck a bad episode of Star Trek right in the middle of my Walking Dead. It was bizarre, oddly written, and just felt weird, but I loved all the Kingdom stuff. So just like what you were saying, you felt like this was an episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, I thought she said there. I loved all the Klingon stuff. It's like, because she was talking about Star Trek. Yeah, that's kind of what I grabbed onto there, and I talked about how it's kind of Star Trek. But
an opposite. I'm skipping down a little bit, but because Road Coder says that he thought it was a great episode. It reminds me of a good episodes from earlier seasons. Rick's battle with Pinhead was fun. Carol hugging Dwight. Daryl was nice.
Oh, Dwight. It wasn't Dwayne. Did I say Dwayne? It was Dwight.
I thought it was Dwight. I just...
Why did I say Dwayne? So like,
ugh. I don't know.
Because I don't care about Dwight. That's why. Okay, go on.
Tara going roller derby was epic. I need to savor it, though, and try not to think about what I saw in the preview for next week. Negan being mean to people. How groundbreaking.
Negan being mean to people. Yeah, Negan's being Negan. I'm going to read Rusty Plune. Mm-hmm. Because I like exaggerating his comments. And I'm sure he loves me exaggerating the comments. Watching the new group felt like I was watching a cartoon. So they have a whole new way of talking in just a few years. Too cartoonish for my taste. Disappointing. I did like Carol and Daryl's reunion.
Dad, you're so cheesy.
I guess he's talking about the trash people. And how...
Yeah, it did seem cartoonish. It did seem like something out of Star Trek. It's kind of, it's like they were forcing, and it's not from the comic as well. So maybe that's why.
It's not from the comic. Yeah. So they came up with this new kind of group that had no basis in the comic. So they're like,
yeah.
And I think they made a mistake. But anyway, well.
I wanted to say that I noticed a blooper, because I know we have a blooper section of our notes, that when they were taking the food after they defeated the trash people, and Tara put one of the buckets in the trunk, and it was, you can't close a trunk, because it was like stacked up on another box, so it was like, really, you can't close a trunk. But then, like, in the next scene when they're driving away, they can close it without no problem. So I thought that was continuity, like, didn't make sense.
A lot of people pointed out that when Rick was standing on the garbage heap and they showed the background with the garbage,
yeah,
going off for miles,
you could see that he was behind a green screen or something.
Yeah, you could see that it was kind of fake. It didn't look realistic. And some people even pointed out that they might have seen like a cars driving by in the distance.
No way.
I say that no. I think it was just birds. And the birds were flying like really low, and some of them were kind of looked at the same, you know, it was birds. But I just, yeah, the green screen, I mean, it wasn't green screen, because they don't do outdoor green screens. They basically just digitally enhance and add. Oh, another trivia.
Trivia!
You know how we said that there's Smokey and the Bandit in the trailer and all that? Well,
yeah.
A car from that movie was this Trans Am. That was in the Smokey and the Bandit.
And you saw that in this episode too?
Not in this episode, but in the previous one, when they were on the bridge with all the parked cars. One car in the distance was an abandoned Trans Am, which again is what they used in Smokey and the Bandit. So two cars from that movie. Now you have to go watch Smokey and the Bandit with all this
discussion.
Now you have to. And by the way, we have a copy of it, so if you want to watch it.
Just mail it to me.
Yeah. Overall, again, thumbs up, thumbs down.
A mediocre episode. I'll give it a sideways thumbs, just because I feel like the Daryl and Carol moment really saved it. Other than that, I thought it was a little weird, but
I guess the ultimate conclusion of all this season is hopefully going to be a fight, a battle. Because if they don't give us a battle, would you be disappointed? Or just say, well, I'll see you at the next season.
With every season, Dad, there always has to be a battle. Like, it's not a Walking Dead about zombies. If there's not zombies involved, there's someone dying.
Yeah, but the last episode, they didn't give us a battle. They gave us, like, a cliffhanger. So, we will see.
Well, they're not going to make the same mistake twice. I can tell you that.
Well, yeah? Really? Okay, we'll see.
Don't ask me for my predictions, Dad, because my hands are off this one. Like, I don't know what to say. All bets are off. Well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends and everyone you know. We love to get new subscribers. You can always send email feedback to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
Stay alive.